The seal colony lay basking on the rocks below her shelter in the early morning sunlight, and already Santan felt the first stirrings of the hunger and the thirst that the day would bring. She armed herself with two stones, each the size of her fist, and the driftwood club, and with elaborate stealth crawled down one of the gullies in the rocks, attempting to get within range of the nearest members of the colony. However, the seals fled honking before she had covered half the distance, and they would not emerge from the surf again while she was in sight. Frustrated and hungry, she went back to the shelter. There were spots of congealed white seal fat on the rock beside the hearth. She crushed a knob of charcoal from the dead fire to powder and mixed it with the fat in the palm of her hand. Then she carefully blacked the tip of her nose and her cheeks, the exposed areas which had been burned by the sun the previous day. Then she looked around the shelter. She had the knife and the scrap of flint, the club and canvas hood, all her worldly possessions, and yet she felt a dragging reluctance to leave the shelter. For a few hours it had been her home. She had to force herself to turn and go down to the beach, and to set out southwards into that ominously monotonous seascape once again. That night there was no cave shelter and no pile of driftwood trapped against a rocky headland. There was no food and nothing to drink, and she rolled herself in the strip of canvas and lay on the hard sand under the dunes. All night a chill little wind blew the fine sands over her, so that at dawn she was coated with sparkling, sugary particles. Sand had encrusted her eyelashes, and salt and sand were thick in her hair. She was so stiff with cold and bruises and overtaxed muscles that at first she hobbled like an old woman, using the club as a staff. As her muscles warmed, the stiffness abated, but she knew she was getting weaker, and as the sun rose higher, so her thirst became a silent scream in the depths of her body. Her lips swelled and cracked, her tongue bloated and furred over with thickening, gluey saliva that she could not swallow. She knelt in the edge of the surf and bathed her face, soaked the canvas shawl of her skimpy clothing, and resisted somehow the temptation to swallow a mouthful of the cool, clear sea water. The relief was only temporary. When the seawater dried on her skin, the salt crystals stung the sun-tender spots and burned her cracked dry lips. The skin seemed to stretch to the point of tearing like parchment, and her thirst was an obsession. In the middle of the afternoon, far ahead of her, on the smooth, wet sand, she saw a cluster of black moving shapes, and she shaded her eyes hopefully. However, the specks resolved into four large seagulls, with pure white chests and black backs, squabbling and threatening each other with open yellow bills as they competed for a piece of flotsam washed ashore by the tide. They rose on outstretched wings as Santan staggered towards them, leaving their disputed prize, too heavy for them to carry, lying on the sand. It was a large, dead fish, already badly mutilated by the gulls, and with new strength Santan ran the last few paces and dropped on her knees. She lifted the fish with both hands and then gagged and dropped it again, wiping her hands on her canvas skirt. The fish was stinking rotten. Her fingers had sunk into the soft, putrefying flesh, as though into cold suet. She crawled away and sat with her arms wrapped around her knees, hugging them to her breast, staring at the lump of stinking carrion and trying to subdue her thirst. It took all her courage, but at last she crawled back to it, and with her face turned away from the stench, hacked off a fillet of the maggot white flesh. She cut a small square of it and placed it cautiously in her mouth. Her stomach heaved at the taste of sickly sweet corruption, but she chewed it carefully, sucked out the reeking juices, spat out the pulpy flesh, and then cut another lump from the fillet. Sickened as much by her own degradation as by the rotten flesh, she kept sucking out the juices, and when she reckoned that she had forced a large cupful down her throat, she rested a while. Gradually, the fluids fortified her. She felt much stronger, strong enough to go on again. She waded into the sea and tried to wash the stench of rotten fish from her hands and lips. The taste lingered in her mouth as she started once more plodding along the edge of the beach. Just before sunset, a new, crippling wave of weakness came over her, and she sank down onto the sand. Suddenly, an icy sweat broke across her forehead, and cramp, like a sword thrust through her belly, doubled her over. She belched, and the taste of rotten fish filled her mouth and nostrils. She heaved, and hot, reeking vomit shot up her throat. She felt despair as she saw so much of her vital fluid splash onto the sand, but she heaved again, and at the contraction she felt a spluttery, explosive release of diarrhea. "Empoisoned!" She fell and writhed on the sand. A spasm after spasm gripped her, and her body involuntarily purged itself of the toxic juices. It was dark by the time the attack passed, and she dragged off the soiled kaminekas and threw them aside. She crawled painfully into the sea and washed her body, splashed her face, and rinsed the taste of rotten fish and vomit from her mouth, prepared to pay for the momentary relief of a clean mouth with later thirst. Then, still on her hands and knees, she crawled up above the high water mark, and in the darkness, shaking with cold, she lay down to die.